हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सहवीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै। ॐ शान्तिश्शान्तिश्शान्तिः। ॐ जय श्रीकृष्णचैतन्यप्रभुनित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्त वृंद। हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे। Sorry. So then from the Mahabharata, or Kuvera offended. It was almost 5 years since Arjuna had departed. Lomasa told the Pandavas that they could expect him to return shortly. He thus instructed them to go to a higher part of the mountain to meet him. Taking their few possessions and accompanied by Domya, Lomasa, and a handful of other Brahmins, the Pandavas climbed to a high plateau on Gandamandana. As the celestial voice had predicted, they came to the ashrams of the royal sage Vrishaparva and the great Rishi Aristisena. Remaining with them for some time, the Pandavas received spiritual instructions from them. Aristisena told them that it would not be possible for them to go further up the mountain. Quote, "Above here lies the path to the higher planets. No man can go there unless he is entirely pure and sinless. Along that path you will find the gods sporting ground. Even from here we can hear the sounds of their kettle drums, tabors, and Venus." Right, so you're going up to a point, and then from there, that's where it keeps going. So we can't see it and all that. But then those who are from there, they can see how everything keeps going and all that. So that's the whole point, is that Maya, by her arrangement, we think that what we have on this planet is all there is. We don't see the connections to the other planet, other aspects of Bhumandala, or how to go to the higher planets or anything like that. You know, it's just like an ant walking around on a table. It can only see how much it can. It can't tell that there's a whole dinner taking place and conversations are going on and there's relationships. You can't understand these things. You know, they're right there. Like that. Aristisena told the brothers he had been to the mountain's summit and seen the gods for himself. He'd also seen the Gandharvas, Vidyadharas, Kimparushas, and other heavenly beings consorting with the Apsaras. The great lord of wealth, Kuvera, could often be seen there being worshipped by the rest of the Yakshas. At that time, this entire region resounds with the melodic chanting of the Samaveda. Daityas, Danavas, and Siddhas alike join in the worship of the illustrious Lokapala Kuvera, because he's in charge of wealth for the whole universe. So naturally, everybody's going to, the higher planets, the lower planets, everyone's going to respect him. The Rishi suggested that the brothers should reside peacefully at his ashram until Arjuna returned. Looking especially at Bhima, he said, "Do not be restless here. Rather, live at ease. Be peaceful. The time will come soon enough for you to display your strength. Without doubt, you will crush your enemies and govern the earth." Because Bhima is always in anxiety that Yudhishthira's not the king. And then he'll have all his, you know, supporting duties he can do. So he's always in anxiety about that. So then Aristisena is telling him, don't be in anxiety, and especially Bhima, because Bhima has a tendency to get very, you know, can get very disturbed, because he thinks very deeply and he really focuses on this, and that aspect of prowess is very strong in him. He doesn't have, like was mentioned before, he doesn't have the patience like Arjuna. The Rishi suggested that the brother, okay, there we go. Surveying the region, the Pandavas felt as if they had already gone to the heavenly planets. Every kind of tree was present, all of them blossoming and blending, bending with the weight of ambrosial fruits. Sweetly singing birds played in the lush foliage, while peacocks, their tails outspread, appeared like the tree's crowns. The lakes teemed with waterfowl and were adorned with lotuses, and the air rang with the hum of maddened bees that drank the nectar falling from the lotus cups. A balmy breeze that carried celestial fragrances and fine drops of cooling spray fanned the brothers. There were countless varieties of animals, all of them peaceful and harmless. So we see is that these kind of arrangements, these are the natural arrangements of there in the spiritual world. So the heavenly planets, you know, will have a closer semblance to the niceness and everything. Difference is in the spiritual world, everybody's sees to making all those arrangements nicely, you know, for the Lord. While here in the material world, then these nice arrangements we want for ourselves. That makes the difference. So because of that, the quality of them is less. So have you done good work? If you are, you can get closer to those nice opulences of the Lord. And if you've done less good work, you get farther away. And so, you know, and in the area that you work in, that's where you get in. So if you work nicely in money, you'll get that. But let's say in the social platform, you don't work nicely, then that will be bad. So you might be a bad character with lots of money. But because of bad character, you'll deal improper with money, then you're going to end up with nothing. You know? So the point is, since it's the Lord's universe, the laws of the universe are given by Him. And He then judges how well you follow His laws. And by that, you do, that's called good karma. You go away from that, that's bad karma. So people can say, oh, we don't need to follow all these, we can do what we want. Yes, you can. But you have to understand, you will get the results. Just like you can go into a store and not buy anything and just yell and scream and run around and all. You can do that, but what's going to happen? You'll be thrown out. It's not that, you know, everyone's going to praise you for being such a fabulous person. No, you know, so you have to behave in the position as is befitting, not just as you please. There were countless varieties of animals, all of them peaceful and harmless. Right? So they were not bothering anybody. So they're all there, they're living peacefully, because they're also higher grade. They may be animals, but they're animals in the heavenly aspect. So they have the karma to become an animal, but at the same time, the karma to be in a very nice situation. Right? So they're not in a garbage dump in Calcutta. One day, as the Pandavas and Draupadi were seated on the shore of a lake, they saw the great eagle Garuda descending towards its waters. The bird blazed with golden effulgence. His huge wing beats created a wind that tossed the forest and sent showers of blossoms to the ground. The force of the descent crushed trees closest to the lake, and the mountain trembled. He flew with the speed of the wind, and before the Pandava's eyes, carried away a mighty Naga serpent who lived in the lake. So he just comes down and just, and then gone, like that. He's so powerful. And the mountain trembled. Having taken hold of the Naga in his talons, Garuda rose high into the sky above the mountain and disappeared into the distance. As the eagle went north, the wind from his wings blew many flowers from the mountaintop down to where the Pandavas sat. Seeing the celestial flowers of five colors, Draupadi said to Bhima, "O best of the Bharatas, see here the exquisite blossoms which have fallen from the mountain peaks. Surely they have come from Kubera's abode. O hero, how I wish to see that heavenly place. But it is heavily guarded by Rakshasas, Yakshas, and other powerful beings. If only Arjuna were here, then when Agni burned the Kandava, your invisible brother held at bay the entire host of gods with her celestial army." In this way, Draupadi playfully taunted Bhima, right? Because he's saying, oh, you know, like before, with the golden thousand-petaled lotus, then she, you know, sent Bhima and that. And so just that she asked, then he went. You know, he was looking for some occupation, something to do. And so he went happily and went like that. Though he was told by Hanuman, don't respect the demigods. Though he didn't exactly. And so then now she's seeing these other special flowers with five different colors. And she's saying, oh, these must have come from Kubera's abode and all that and that. But, you know, what to do? You know, only Arjuna, when he was able during the burning of the Kandava to keep the demigods at bay and all this and that. You know, so what to do? We'll have to wait for him to come. Right? So last time she just directly told him, please, can you get this for Yudhishthira? Now she's then taunting him in a playful way. Bhima frowned as Draupadi went on. Surely you too are capable of standing against any foe, human or celestial. O Bhima, send all the Rakshasas fleeing to the 10 directions by the mere force of your arms. Let all of us approach this mountain peak without fear. I have cherished this thought in my mind for some time. Protected by your prowess, I long to see this mountaintop. So first she taunts, you know, the only Arjuna, if he wasn't here. But no, but surely you can also do. And oh, I would, you know, you see all the motions move around and all these things and that. So it's very, very clever. But you see, it's all very pleasant and very sweet and that, but very exact. It gets the work done. So that's one of the qualities of the of the ladies that are very nicely trained is that using pleasant speech, they can get anything they need done like that. They know exactly how to speak and speak to the emotions and when to put forward energy, when to pull back, when to show, you know, some interest and some, you know, the distress or all these things that use all these contradictory qualities. Bhima looked like a wounded bull. He could not stand Draupadi's words. Without delay, he rose up, took his weapons, and made his way up the mountainside. Moving with the gait of a lion, that mighty man, as tall as a young sal tree, having a complexion of burnished gold. Right, so it's gold, but it's been polished, so it has a very effulgent. With broad shoulders and a neck like a conch shell, right? It means you actually have the three lines on these really auspicious necks. You know, they'll be nice, they won't be too long, you know, they'll be more short, and they'll have these nice lines on it. So very auspicious. He rushed with full force towards the sheer rock face, which led to the mountain's summit. Right, so remember before is that Arishthisena, he had said that you have to stop here because above this is only those who are qualified for the heavenly planets. But them being pure devotees, they could go anywhere in the universe. But, you know, they follow the human norms, and so they don't try to go outside of that. At least we see as Yudhishthira does. But then Bhima, you know, to please Draupadi or for some special work, then he'll always take up the challenge. Bhima quickly found a narrow passage by which he could scale the mountain, which was inaccessible to ordinary men. Grasping hold of creepers and crevices in the rocks, he climbed swiftly. As he reached the summit, he came to a vast plateau where he beheld Kuvera's abode. Right? Remember before where he went to that lake and that area there. And then Kuvera's place was above that. And they said, can we come, you know, and see? And they said, no, not right now. Because the whole idea is that for most people, they have to do something, and only with that piety they can go. But it just wasn't the time yet. And because they have the piety, Yudhishthira and his brothers can go like that. But here then, you know, he's gone up. And the second thing is, remember we said Arishthisena had told him, be peaceful, right? You know, but here, being goaded by Draupadi, you know, in a playful way, then he's taken up the challenge. It was adorned with glowing golden and crystal buildings of celestial design. High golden walls encrusted with gems of every color surrounded the heavenly mansions where Kuvera lived. Right, so naturally, he being the treasure of the demigods, then his place, you know, would be crystal and gold and all these different things, and encrusted walls encrusted with jewels. Right, it's not just like in the house or, you know, a table or a particular piece of ornament is no, the walls around it are encrusted. Like, you know, that's rich. Bhima leaned on the end of his bow and gazed in wonder at the city. Ramparts and towers stood all around it, and it was graced by huge gates and rows of tall flagstaffs. Their colorful pendants fluttered in the wind. In the gardens outside the city lay heaps of gems, and along its walls hung garlands. And so the gardens outside, this is piles of gems. You know, it's just something you can go out, sit, and play, and just make some nice light, or it looks beautiful like that. You know, because it's well guarded, so no one will come and steal them. The trees were beyond human imagination, and around them, Bhima saw many beautiful apsaras dancing to the strains of heavenly music. Right, so all the heavenly personalities have come and they'll stay, you know, hang out in his gardens. The outside, the inside gardens are his private ones, so unless he invites. But when you make the outside, those are public. You know, and then you use them nicely according to the etiquette. Just like a city. A city is of a certain size, and it'll have its walls and that. And then outside is a certain amount of land all around that's supposed to be free, so that farming can go on, cows can be grazed, people can go and, you know, for walks there and spend time and, you know, all these different things. So that's all part of the public property. And then if you want, you can get, you know, the king can give you a place where you can farm and things like that. This is for city dwellers. We're not talking about in the villages. Then the king's given an area of land and they naturally farm and live and everything like this. But I'm talking about the cities. The sight of Kuvera's opulence sorrowed Bhima as he remembered the wealth Yudhishthira had once possessed, right? Because he had wealth that no one had seen before. Then he became angry as he remembered Duryodhana's crimes. He took out his conch shell and blew it with the full force of his lungs, right? So normally you can just blow it a little bit, but it's full force. So he went up there and he saw, and then he's seeing it, so it's beautiful, but then he remembered Yudhishthira had wealth like this, and that was taken by Duryodhana, and now he's become angry. The sound echoed around the mountain summit and struck terror into the hearts of all creatures. From the ramparts, the startled Yaksha and Rakshasa guards saw Bhima standing with his bow, sword, and mace. Yeah, they're startled because who comes there? You know, Kuvera's place in the Himalayas there, and so then, you know, no one comes up there like that. Everyone's peaceful there. So for someone to come there and you know, blow their war conch. They swarmed out in the thousands and rushed at him, shouting in anger. Their upraised clubs, maces, swords, javelins, spears, and axes seemed to blaze up as they advanced. Bhima shot numerous arrows at them, cutting off their weapons and striking down the Rakshasas, who were on the ground and in the sky. The Yakshas hemmed Bhima in on all sides. He now appeared like the sun enveloped by clouds. Without fear, he took out his sword and severed the arms, legs, and heads of his assailants. As he fought with the roaring Yakshas, he was drenched in showers of blood. Although they attacked him from every side, the celestial fighters did not see Bhima flinch or become discouraged. Right, so he's so powerful that even he's surrounded by celestial warriors. It's not like he's worried about it. You know, it could have been he's surrounded by, you know, a bunch of kids, you know, coming and wrestling with him or something. Mangled by his weapons, they fell back in fear, uttering fearful cries of distress. They dropped their weapons and fled in all directions, while he just stood there very calmly. The commander of the Yaksha army, Maniman, addressed his fleeing troops angrily. How will you tell Vaishravana, that means Kuvera, that a single man has routed vast numbers of Yakshas, right? Because it's one man. You know, you're going to run back and say, you know, what happened? Yeah, one guy standing out there and he's killed, you know, thousands and we're all running away and this and, you know, how are you going to tell him that? It's one thing if you said, yes, you know, somebody from another place showed up with, you know, tens of thousands of warriors and this and very prowess and that way it was, no, one guy. So, yeah. The powerful Maniman, armed with darts, clubs, javelins, and maces, stood as firm as a mountain. So he's like Bhima, right? You know, he's not disturbed. His voice boomed out like a drum. O human, stay and fight. Having come to the Lord of Wealth's abode, you shall now be able to see Yamaraj's abode. Right? You know, so he's just in a very poetic way saying that, you know, now you come to Kuvera's place to see, but, you know, by coming here, then you'll be able to see Yamaraj's abode. With a terrible yell, Maniman rushed Bhima, who instantly released three arrows, each of which pierced Maniman in the side. Maniman then hurled his mace at Bhima, and it flew towards him like a flash of lightning. Bhima fired arrows that struck the mace with force, but were unable to stop it. Quickly, Bhima raised his own mace and smashed the Yaksha's mace. As it fell towards him with the force of a thunderbolt, seeing his mace broken, Maniman threw an iron club. Right, so he's thrown this, and then Bhima, you know, with the arrows, has been able to hit it, but not completely stop it. But then with his own mace, then he's been able to break it. Remember, he got before that special mace that's as strong as 100,000 maces. You know, so only someone like Bhima would be able to wield it. So that was, you know, when the Danava, when he was Maya Danava, when he was building the sabha for Yudhishthira Maharaj. As the golden-handled club shot through the air, it roared and sent forth bright orange flames and showers of sparks. Bhima moved aside, but the club caught him on the arm, sending him spinning with blood flowing from his gashed arm. Maniman shouted triumphantly as Bhima fell back for a moment, but Bhima soon recovered and again raised his mace, known as Shaka. He rushed at Maniman with a tremendous cry. The Yaksha hurled a huge dart, and it screamed through the air, glowing like the sun. Bhima hurled his mace and knocked the blazing dart away. Bhima then resolved to kill his adversary without further delay. Because, yeah?
Just no.
Yeah, up to this point, then we see that Bhima has been, fighting, but he hasn't made the decision, oh, I'm going to kill all these guys. He's just fighting. If they get close and like that, you defeat them and everything. But now he's made that with Maniman. He whirled the Shaika over his head and rushed towards the Yaksha. With a shout that reverberated around the mountain, Bhima hurled his mace at Maniman. It struck him full on the chest with a fearful crash and split his heart in two. The Yaksha fell to the ground like a palm tree flattened by a hurricane. Like that. Yeah. Seeing their commander lying dead, the surviving Yakshas and Rakshasas fled. Bhima stood alone on the mountain plateau, looking around for further attack. So we'll continue again. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Shri Prabhupada.